Utility Authority. Would you please join me with the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag?
Pledge allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we go into it, I'd like to introduce some very special people. We have two of the original board members here, the very original KUA board, Dick Hoard and my husband, Bruce Van Meter.
Welcome.
And Kurt Lewinstein is sitting right next to him. He came on the next year. So he's only one year short of being of the original KUA. So welcome, all of you guys. We're very proud of what you started. And hopefully we're carrying on the tradition. Now we'll start with the awards and presentations. Jim?
Okay, that's a... Coralie, would you please come forward?
Coralie Vasquez.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good to see you.
Coralie Vasquez, she's celebrating her fifth anniversary here at KUA. She started off as a senior buyer, and she's still our senior buyer. Congratulations, Coralie.
And Alexandra Sanchez is not with us tonight, but we will be honoring her for 10 years of service in that appropriate time in the near future. But Juan Diego is here. Juan, come forward, please.
Juan Vallejo, he is celebrating his 10th year anniversary here with KUA. He started off as a part-time meter reader, and he is currently an electric meter technician. Congratulations, Juan. David Wolf, he is celebrating his 15th year anniversary with KUA. He started off as a groundman, and he's currently a line crew supervisor. Congratulations, David. Rosa Rodriguez, she's celebrating her 20th anniversary with KUA. She started off as a part-time clerical assistant one, and she's currently a utility billing representative number two. Congratulations, Rosa.
Congratulations.
Michelle, this is something. That's a yes. Congratulations. Thank you for everything you do.
And Director Ethel Urbina.
Hello. Hi, Michelle. Congratulations. Here's to a day off with Dave. Enjoy it.
And Director Manuel, congratulations.
Thank you.
And Director Kathleen Becker. What we got, Kathleen?
Congratulations. Got a little check.
Rub the green. You can't beat that one. There you go. And Director Ray Hempel.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We have a parking space for you, as well as some a gift basket from a historical society.
Thank you.
And last but certainly not least, our esteemed mayor, Jose Alvarez.
So nice to meet you. Thank you. Congratulations. Here's some tickets for Osceola Arts.
Thank you. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Now we go to hear the audience. I think we have an esteemed member of the community. Commissioner Hawkins, would you like to come speak to us? Oh, no, excuse me. It's our esteemed Jacob
other,
Williams,
other
the other esteemed member of the audience, FMPA. So many people here. I get a question.
No, that's quite all right. Well, thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. And I know we've got celebration going. The FMPA, I represent the FMPA Board of Directors in honoring Jim Welch today. And Jim, they passed a resolution, Your Honor, at the last board meeting. And so if you would allow me, I'd like to read the resolution and then say a few words as well. Whereas James Welch has selflessly dedicated his time and talents to FMPA, contributing countless hours to the FMPA business activities during the past 36 years, in which he has been associated with the agency, and whereas Jim Welch has faithfully represented KUA, including his service on FMPA's board of directors from 1982 to 2014, and his service on FMPA's executive committee from 1984 to 2011, and whereas Jim Welch has provided long and valuable leadership to FMPA, serving 3 years as vice chairman of the FMPA board of directors from 2000 to 2002 and as chairman of the board of directors from 2006 to 2008. And whereas under his leadership, chairmanship, FMPA modernized the board governance structure, enhanced decision-making, reorganized the executive committee to give the All Requirements Project greater self-reliance. And whereas Jim Welch has championed the interest and values of all municipals being involved, an active member in APPA, the National Association, FMEA, the State Association, including serving on the board of directors of both APPA and FMEA. And whereas James Welch has served KUA's president and general manager since 1982, providing leadership and guidance and sorely missed with his forthcoming retirement. Now, therefore, let it be known that all the members of FMPA's Board of Directors will forever be grateful to James C. Welch for his years of service and significant leadership and contribution. Therefore, this resolution of appreciation shall become permanent record of the FMPA as a tribute to his service. We, the Board of Directors of FMPA, in unanimous vote, adopt this resolution on February 14th, 2019, signed by the Chairman, Bill Conrad, and the Secretary, Lynn Tejeda. Jim.
Thank you very much.
I did have a couple other words of my own as well. That's from the board. And Jim, if you didn't mind.
Brilliant.
Thank you. I've had the pleasure of now serving as FMPA's CEO and general manager for the last 2.5 years. And not everyone knows the story that Jim and Larry were instrumental in my coming here to FMPA. And Jim, you weighed in the process to bring me here, and forever grateful for that. Once I got here, I came to learn about the significance that KUA has played under Jim's leadership. KUA is obviously the site of over half of the generation for our 13 communities comes from the city of KUA that you operate at Kane Island. Half of every megawatt hour that we provide all our customers, members, comes from the KUA facility. And it's under your leadership that those facilities were all built and put together, and it's operated not at just a good standard for municipals. It operates at a national caliber standard. That's why the generation power gen keeps coming here every year or every other year when they're in Orlando to show off the facility that under your leadership was put together and Larry and team operate to this day. So we're forever grateful, and all the advice and counsel you provided me when I first came on board learning the area and the state of Florida well. So thank you very much. Thank you for helping put FMPA in a great position now to serve our members very low cost, including KUA, and move forward. So again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Say something there or save it for later.
Well, I just wanted to ask you, Jake, to please extend my thanks to all my colleagues at FMPA. It was, you know, if you keep saying these nice things about me, I'm going to start believing them. And that's going to be trouble for my under. I'm going under new management, and they're going to disagree with that.
Well said. Well said. There being that, I will go to the consent agenda. I need a motion for approval.
Motion.
We have a motion.
Second.
We have motions and seconds.
Numerous.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Excuse me, amendment passes. Okay, we go to public hearing. There's being none. Presentations, none. Old business, none. New business, tariff change. The net metering tier 3. Is that Kevin? Is that Kevin?
Did we get to hear the audience?
Yes, sir.
We did?
We did. Yes, sir.
And until they get kind of cleared out.
Who? Fred?
Fred Hawkins.
I don't know. I'll find out.
I think that's all part of something at the end. I think so, sir.
Okay. Because they got it under control.
I think.
Okay, I think we're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Board. Good afternoon. Kevin Crawford, Vice President of Finance and Accounting, and I'm here to bring some business before you this afternoon regarding a tariff change for our net metering agreement for Tier 3 applicants. And basically what that entails, a little bit of background, because that sounds like a pretty ominous way to start the meeting, but this is kind of where we are. Currently, we are working with our first potential Tier 3 net metering customer for solar rooftop. And this tier is for those customers who wish to install a 100 kilowatt and less, more than, greater than 100 kilowatt and less than or equal to 2 megawatts. It is our highest tier that we currently offer, and this is our first, obviously, applicant to this particular tier, hence we're bringing to you this business today. Presently included in the net metering tariff is a study fee of $2,500, which is paid to KUA, and then the applicant goes and has their study done to determine engineering impacts and impacts to the system, which are of a very technical nature. And what we've come to figure out is the actual cost of that can vary significantly beyond the $2,500. Currently, KUA is in the position of collecting that as a deposit, and then the cost of the study is done, and then the KUA foots that bill. And given the magnitude of that and the imprecise language that currently exists in the tariff, given the fact that those fees can amount to more than that, we'd like to just take that language completely out of the tariff and make that a contractual agreement between the customer and whomever they use to use the study. So what we believe is that the study and the fee is more appropriate in the net metering application. And so there's three components. There's the net metering contract, the application, and then the tariff. And what we'll probably do is amend the application language and the contract language to specify with our engineering folks what that study needs to accomplish so that they still have that part of it done, but just take KUA out of the taking the money from one and giving it to the other completely and make that a matter of business between those two. So given that we feel like it should be something negotiated between the customer and their study provider based on our KUA criteria, KUA will no longer collect this fee, and thus it necessitates a tariff change to recognize that fact. And so what we are showing to you today to recommend is the current tariff reads thusly, that greater than 100 kilowatts for Tier 3 applicants, greater than 100 kilowatts and less than or equal to 2 megawatts, they currently pay a $470 plus a study fee, and then here's the language about the deposit of $2,500 customer, and this is the language we're seeking to take out. And so the new tariff will read as this recommended change shows: Tier 3 equals the same criteria for greater than 100 kW and less than or equal to 2 megawatts, and then the $470 application fee. And then any fees incurred for the study will be, again, between the applicant and the person providing that study. And here's the formal recommendation to you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions? I have a question, Kevin. Yes. You said that there will we have some criteria that we want to put on this?
Yes, ma'am. In fact, our finance folks, customer service, and E&O folks are meeting tomorrow because there are impacts to the load, and I think, and I don't want to pretend to be an engineer, but the technical aspects of that, that implications for our load and for wherever it's going to be installed, those kind of things need to be determined so that we can see what it will do to our system as the transformers in the area able to handle this type of activity, among other things, obviously, and things of an engineering nature that we'll have to determine. And once we make those specifications, which I don't think will be overly burdensome, these are just things that you would typically do for something like this anyway. Once we make that determination, then we'll include that language in the application for future applicants so that they'll be aware of that coming into the process and aware of what, you know, the typical fees might be for something like that.
So therefore, we won't be charging the fees, but our criteria will cause the fees to be charged by somebody.
That is correct. And since we're not receiving any money, there's no reason for a tariff to specify that. But yes, ma'am, you're correct that there will be monies involved, but it will not involve KUA, just the criteria we've established.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just had a question on the criteria. Can you go back to the last one?
Let's see.
Can we add that any other fee incurred between the vendor and the customer should be between them?
We could do that. I believe that the brevity of the language implies that the tariff serves a separate purpose. It only specifies the fee that we do collect. In the application and the contract, it will specify that you will have to pay those fees to the third party that will be providing the study. We felt that because the imprecise nature of, we don't know what that study will cost, we don't want to include it in the tariff language, so we'd rather leave that out of the tariff and make that a part of the application contract. And it sort of makes it a little bit cleaner when we present this to the PSC, and they can see, here's all the money KUA is collecting, or is the 470, and anything else would be part of the application process, if that makes sense.
Manny was next. Manny?
A quick question. On the common household rooftop system, what tier are they fall under? I know we got three tiers, right?
You know, I'm glad
one would they fall into?
They would be in the Tier 1, theoretically. Those are, I have that number here. So our Tier 1 is currently 10 kW or less, and right now we've got 491 customers at the end of January, which is the last count we had for solar rooftop customers. 383 of those customers are in the Tier 1, and that would be 10 kW or less, and that's about 2.5 megawatts. In the Tier 2, which is the second tier, which is the 10 kW, greater than 10 kW, less than 100, we have 108 customers, and that's about 1.3 megawatt total for those. So the majority of our customers fall into the Tier 1, and that would be a typical rooftop installation, if I'm not mistaken. So that would be...
But Tier 2 would be commercial, bigger business?
I would say maybe your small commercial customers and maybe apartment complex or things, that, you know, but multi-housing or higher density, I would think. But rooftop typically is less, 10 kW or less.
Thank you.
Kathleen, did you have something?
So there will be restrictions on who can do the study based on the ability to provide the information that we need?
There will probably be a natural limitation given the fact that there's not a lot of people that may do that service, but we will leave that to the discretion of the applicant to make that determination. As long as the study meets our criteria, we're really indifferent as to who performs the service.
Okay.
That's what makes it clean. We just stay out of it.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Exactly.
Do I have a motion to accept?
So move.
Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Finance and accounting. I guess you're up again.
With apologies, I'm your only entertainment for the afternoon, so.
It turns that way every time you're up here.
You'll see me next month on budget, so, you know, it just works out that way, right? But I appreciate the opportunity to present to you the results of operation for our quarterly financial statements for the period ending December 31st, 2018. And I was teasing my colleagues last week. Our agenda item reads that the CFO will, or the VP of Finance will present a brief presentation, and I'm always accused of not being so brief. So in the interest of brevity, I'll try to move along as quickly as possible. But what you see here is basically good news. We're showing you that our megawatt hour sales for 2019, or the first quarter of 2019 actuals, are exceeding what we anticipated to be at budget by about 8%. And we're exceeding 2018's actuals by about 5%. So we are doing, in terms of megawatt hour sales, we're doing good for the first quarter. We attribute this largely to is weather related, and we all kind of have a collective memory of hot and cold months, and we sort of had more heating and cooling degree days in these 3 months prior for this fiscal quarter than we did in the previous year. And so you can see the result is increased megawatt hour sales. We have are also happy to report that we are maintaining our excellent financial strength by meeting all of the financial metrics that the board has laid out for us to meet and still achieving a positive net income of $5.9 million for the year-to-date for the quarter ended 12/31. So we have achieved those goals and achieved positive net income.
Is that normal? Do we normally keep it that way, or is that more or less? Or
I was looking comparing to last year. It's a little less, but the reason is, and I'll get into it, we didn't draw as much from rate stabilization into income because we didn't have a requirement for it. But that's fairly close to where we expected to be. I looked at our metered sales revenue compared to the prior 2 or 3 years, and we're pretty close. Net income varies on other components, but our sales were pretty close to where we expected them to be for the prior few years. This is the metric that you've asked us to accomplish, improving customer service by maintaining our rates in the bottom one-third of all KWH or FMEA rate comparison survey in the state of Florida. We're happy to report that we have achieved that. You'll note that we report this to you in this slide on the October 2015, which is the inception date of this metric being installed, through that quarter ended. We also, though, meet this metric on a fiscal year basis and on a benchmark year basis, which you've also established for us. So all three metrics, life-to-date, year-to-date fiscally, and also on the metric year, we have met that goal since its inception, and so we're happy to share that with you today. Operating revenue, kind of take you through where we are and where this is just a comparison to where we thought we'd be and where we actually ended up. Metered sales revenue, we expected to be about $55 million. We're a little bit better than that at $59 million, and that's an 8% increase, which is very commensurate with the increase in megawatt-hour sales, so a 4.4 variance to the positive in that regard. Then we move into the COPA. We had budgeted to use about $11 million to true up the COPA cost to our customers, and we actually utilized about $14 million. Because fuel expenses turned out to be a little bit less than what we'd anticipated for this quarter. So that's a variance of $3.4 million that was additional true-up return to customers through that process, through the COPA. Rate Stabilization Fund transfer, to your point, Ms. Van Meter, the $5.1 million is what we'd expected to use in the budget year-to-date. We were able to actually put back or utilize only 229 of that. There's a couple reasons for that. We didn't have any cash flow expenditures as much as we'd anticipated on a couple of capital improvement projects, more related to timing. And we also, because of the long-term debt that was paid off last year, there were some bond reserves that are required for the bond governance that we don't have to keep in reserves anymore. So we can pull those into general reserve and use them in lieu of rate stabilization. And so that was an assistance to rate stabilization this period. So that's a $4.9 million variance with rate stabilization usage. So we'll put that back and use it for a future period. Total operating revenue then, when you add all those up, we expect it to be about $53 million. We came in a little bit under that at $49 because of the increased usage for COPA and a $3.7 million variance there. So even though we had increased sales, utilized more COPA, so revenues are a little bit less than where we expected them to be. You had asked for this on a previous occasion to provide this to you. This is how we are utilizing rate stabilization for the purpose of maintaining the bottom one-third metric. The first column that you see, the big tall green one there, the 20.6, that corresponds to what we expect to use out of rate stabilization for the entire fiscal year of 2019. And that is a combination of how we'll expend that on capital, which currently we don't have any debt long term, so all the capital projects that we're engaging in are being funded from rate stabilization. So the usage of that rate stabilization will be primarily two things. It's going to be maintaining the bottom one-third metric and using it for capital expenditures. The 5.1 is where I just showed you is where we expect it to be for this quarter. So being one-fourth of the 20, that's what we were thinking it would be for this quarter. But we ended up using much less than that. And with the net contribution to rate stabilization of $200,000, we pulled in about $500,000 from our FMPA rate stabilization. So if you want to look at the true cost and say, Kevin, what did it cost to stay in the bottom one-third this quarter? It was $500,000, and I'll show it to you on the next slide, that we used from our rate stabilization at FMPA. So moving into that realm, the demand charges, which are the semi-fixed portion of what we get from FMPA, we expected to spend about $17 million. Actually, about $13.7 is where we ended up, for a positive variance of $3.3 million. Our energy charges, which is obviously the variable component based on usage, $10 million is budgeted. We actually, a little bit more because of the increased sales, the variable cost increased just a bit to the $1.1 million increase to that. And here's the usage of the bulk system rate stabilization, the $500,000 that we use to stay in the bottom one-third. So we use that rate stabilization there at FMPA to accomplish that task and kept us from using our rate stabilization here. And then total fuel and purchase power, we thought it cost about $29 million. We came in a little bit under that at 27.7 for a $1.3 million variance. And then all the math adds up to taking revenue minus where we are at this point in expenses. $24 million is where we expected to be. We're actually at $21 million operating revenue, 21.9 for a $2.4 million variance. Moving into operations, the O&M, and this is all the departments that we have here at KUA, and that's how we spent our money this first period, gives you some of the highlights for those numbers that look a little bit squirrely. I'll alleviate the anxiety and say these are all mostly related to timing issues. First quarter, we see that pretty routinely. The $211,000 is a maintenance contract that the IT department paid for our CIS system in the first quarter. The customer service group had a positive variance, but they have some vacant positions. They're going to be spending some money on operating supplies and things of that nature throughout the year. So theoretically, what we do is we take, you know, one-fourth of the budget, and that's what we put in for this budget. Doesn't always work that way in real life, obviously, so that's why you see a lot of these timing variances that work themselves out through the course of the year. Corporate communications, we expected to be at $313,371 is what was spent, a $58,000 variance, but that's largely due to the grants that come in throughout the year, and it's a timing issue where we fund a lot of those at the beginning of the fiscal year, and so it creates a timing variance that you see there, $58,000. So net operating revenue of $15 million is budgeted. We actually came in at 12.2, which is a little bit less than where we thought we'd be, and a $2.9 million variance. Other operating expenses, and this is all the other miscellaneous costs that fall into the cost of doing business, depreciation, intergovernmental transfers, debt service, and things like that, including interest income. No stories there, no surprises. Those all came in about what we thought they would be. We expected to be of a total net income. A change in net position is equivalent to a net income to us. And we budgeted $8.9 million. We came in at $5.9, a little bit less than that, for a $2.9 million variance. Just a brief overview of our investment portfolio. No real surprises here either. Our total portfolio value at the end of the period was $112 million. The vast majority of that money is invested in the SBA and U.S. government securities. All of these are very short-term instruments, and you'll see on the next page, due to the short-term nature of those, we don't quite get the bang for that long end of the yield curve, because we keep those monies shortly invested so that we can have them for liquidity, particularly when we have big projects like AMI substations coming on in the next fiscal year, which we do. So we like to keep that money available rather than pay penalties on selling an investment short and losing that money. So we're about 2.19, which is about where we thought we'd be in terms of yield, a little bit less than the SBA, which tends to invest a little bit longer term than we do. And here again sort of is the kicker as to why that occurs. All of our money, as you can see, the vast majority are invested within a short-term one-year span for maturity. So it gives you an idea about why we invest short-term for liquidity, and that's why, based on that graph there. So that is all that I had to present to you this afternoon with financial results. Happy to answer any questions for you.
Questions?
No. Good report.
Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Moving to hear our attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. First, I want to thank everyone for an excellent rally, and I heard something came back through the pipeline from APPA, which was quite nice. You may recall at the LNR meeting, there was an excellent presentation given by the new chairman of the House Energy Committee, and we complimented him when we met with Congressman Soto. And Congressman Soto shared that with the chairman, who shared that with APPA. So that was nice. Good work. Good work. And then we do have upcoming the FMEA legislative rally at the beginning of next month in Tallahassee. There are several issues I just wanted to alert you to. First, we get to play a little offense for a change. There are a couple bills we like that we'll be able to promote and advocate for. Particularly in both the House and Senate, a bill has been dropped which would protect from disclosure customers who have meter data to one billing period. So, for example, I know there's some concern that once AMI is fully deployed, you know, I don't want somebody to be able to see that, you know, I'm busy between the hours of 9 and 10 and things like that. People are sensitive to their consumption history being available to the world. Well, this bill doesn't allow that. This bill allows us to protect information up to a month-long billing cycle. So that's great progress, and we've been working successfully with the First Amendment Foundation because, of course, they have concerns whenever you reduce the amount of sunshine. But we've made some good arguments with them, and right now it's a consensus, and it's already passed unanimously through its first committee. So hopefully that'll continue to go well. That would give our customers a great deal of assurance. Secondly, on the where we're going to play defense, there is a bill that's been introduced which would subject municipal utilities like KUA to the same rules and regulations that investor-owned utilities are subject for medically essential customers. And the reason that's not necessary is that we follow those guidelines without being told to, without a hammer over our head, just for best practices because we care about our customers. We already follow those guidelines, so it kind of seems like a solution in search of a problem. So we'll be fighting that effort. And finally, there is some indication that the 5G wireless movement, the utilities, the telecommunications utilities behind that, may make legislative efforts to bring us into and under the state statute that requires cities and counties and local governments to provide right-of-way use at restricted cost, at an accelerated shot clock for getting the work done, that they may include us in our polls in that state legislation. We're already suing the FCC for trying to do that on the federal basis. So that fight's just still going hot and heavy, and if that happens, we'll be opposing it. And with that, Madam Chair, that's my report for this month.
Okay, very good. Jim, would you like to wait until everybody's spoken before you?
Sure. I don't mind having the last word.
I think that might be appropriate. Mr. Mayor, you have something for the good of the order?
No.
Okay. Kathleen?
No.
Manny? Okay. Well, at that point then, Jim, if you will join us up to the front and all of our directors, we have a presentation for you. So,
No, he's gonna present a scholarship to Jim.
Okay, Jim, there's another whereas is here, and there's going to be lots more. There's just 36 years of whereas, and we couldn't put them all in one sheet. Okay, so this is the City Utility Authority Proclamation. Whereas President, General Manager, and Chief Executive Officer, James C. Welsh's retirement with the City Utility Authority, 2019, whereas James C. Welsh has faithfully and proudly served the City Utility Authority for more than 36 years, as James C. Welsh was instrumental in the decision for the City Utility Authority to join the Florida Municipal Power Association project, May 1st, 2002, providing for the future power and the goods customers, and whereas James C. Welsh has lent his wisdom in the creation of many infrastructure projects during his tenure, including the Clay Street Substation, Fidel Ford Substation, Boy Substation, K-Nyer, Power Park, Davis 1, 2, 3, and 4, Hartwall, Marathia, Ansel, Mango Tower Substations, all of which will serve AUA's customers in this community. And whereas James C. Welsh led the effort to relocate the AUA administration building to 1701 West Carroll Street from 8 West Broadway, dedicated on September 3rd, which improved significantly the foundation to provide services for a growing community. And whereas James C. Welsh led the City Utility Authority to devastating hurricanes, restoring power as quickly and safely as possible to the affected communities, including the worst natural disaster in AUA history, Hurricane Charlie. Whereas James C. Welsh served on the Florida Municipal Power Agency Board of Directors from 1982 to 2014, the American Public Power Association Board of Directors from 1997 to 2003, and President of the Statewide Florida Municipal Electric Association, 1995 to 1996. And whereas James C. Welsh is a past recipient of APPA's James D. Donovan Individual Achievement Award, and through his leadership, led the utility to earn the utilities industry's highest national honor in 2016, APPA's EF Standards and Systems Achievement Award. And whereas, during his 36 years of service, James C. Welsh saw that the City Utility Authority customer base grow from 85 employees and 18,000 customers to the nearly 300 employees and 74,000 electric customers it serves today. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that henceforth, now, and forever, the City Utility Authority Administration Building will be known as the James C. Welsh Administration Building, and shall be referred to as such in all official documents. Appropriate signage shall be displayed on the site. Further, it be claimed that the KUA Board of Directors commits to awarding a 4-year, $2,500 per year scholarship to be used by students in pursuit of their electrical engineering degree at College of University. Scholarship includes the B.C. Welsh Leadership and Engineering Scholarship and awarded annually to the graduating high school senior in good academic standing who resides at the KUA Service Territory. Demonstrated service to this community to be determined by the foundation process. We're unable to do so. That is testified in the superintendent of Los Angeles. Therefore, further, let it be proclaimed that the KUA Board of Directors is entitled to express their sincere thanks and appreciation to James C. Welsh for his 3+ decades of service to the community.
slide it back in here.
Just put it right down.
Yeah.
Nice to see. Well, that's
beautiful. Ed, do you want to say something now? I think you have something to say to Jim.
First of all, Jim, congratulations. I've always enjoyed our lunches as a commissioner. We always met at the Loop, and your advice and your mentoring was just remarkable for me as a community leader, and you will be missed. You are an icon. But today I get to be here in my role as president of the Osceola Education Foundation, and so heartwarming to know
what they have put together for you, because now not only will the students going in electrical engineering get these degrees, your name will constantly be on that scholarship. Your name will also be associated with changing lives of students right here in Osceola County. Our partnership with KUA and the foundation has been well established, and this is just one more way of continuing that, and we're honored to have the scholarship in your name. Thank you, sir, for your time.
We can all
you can reconvene the meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're reconvening and it'll be on TV. Okay, let's do that. Let's reconvene. Can we do that, guys?
Yeah, I hate to have my 45 minutes.